The scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Welcome back to Tennis Connected Studios for September 3rd, 2017. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here for our week 2 preview of the US Open. This week's show is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for week 2 action if you're looking to get down to NYC. This week's podcast, obviously, our co-host Parsa. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Can you believe what's going on?
It's been a heck of a good week. It's been a little bit up and down. We're getting, as you said off air, we're getting a little bit more conformity on the women's side and a little bit more uncertainty on the men's side, which is not usually what we've been seeing so far in 2017. But I think as the week continues to develop, you're going to see that that's going to, you know, bridge the gap a little bit, and it's going to get a little bit more certain.
I challenge that in saying, how do you see that bottom half of that men's draw going? Let's jump right into that.
I'm going to tell you, you know, I think I need a little bit of credit here because I picked Cilic, Federer, Wimbledon final. Federer, okay, it's Federer, but Cilic is a pretty good pick. And as I said in last week's show, I'm going Kevin Anderson, Nadal final, and they're still both in the tournament. Obviously, I had Ferrer, lost first round to Kukushkin, which was a surprise, I think, for a lot of people. And I'm never picking Nick Kyrgios again. He lost first round, he tanked against his countryman Milman. I mean, the guy's just completely out to lunch right now. He needs to fix a lot of things. So until he does that, you're not going to be hearing me talk too much about him as one of my picks. But with that said, we still got Nadal, we still got Federer, we still got Del Potro, Thiem, and Anderson in the mix. So I think you're going to see probably one of those four or five guys win this title. And then we'll get into the women's.
You mean not Diego Schwartzman?
Diego Schwartzman, I was out there today, and in an electric atmosphere. Such a pro-Argentine crowd out there on the grandstand. Very nice to see and hear. And I mean, what a story he is. He's about 5 foot nothing. I think he's smaller than me, and he's just out there not missing a ground stroke and serves pretty well for a guy's height. I mean, he's hitting, you know, 110 to 115 for serves, and, you know, Lucas Pouille is a very athletic, talented guy, and he was there, and he was losing a serve, but then he would break right back. And then he suffered some, like, hamstring injury at the end of the third. He pretty much just tanked the last couple games. He completely regrouped at the beginning of the fourth, and, you know, just ran away with it from there. And as we know, Pouille's been playing pretty well on hard courts. He was defending quarterfinal points from last year, so he knows how to play at this tournament and on this surface. But credit to Diego, and, you know, he's ready to go.
That's pretty impressive. Schwartzman is what the New Yorkers love a big heart in a little engine, and he's showing everything that a New Yorker loves. And he will not only get the Argentine fans there, but he's making fans all over the country right now.
And his reward for his efforts today is a quarterfinal clash with Carreno Busta from Spain.
Who he can beat.
Who is the highest ranked player in the bottom half of the draw as the number 12 seed, obviously inflated with all of the withdrawals. He took out today, you know, the Cinderella man of the tournament, Denis Shapovalov. He took him out 6-6 and 6. Progressively easier tiebreakers as they went forward. I mean, Denis had chances. He was up 5-2 in the first set, couldn't capitalize. He had some set points, and I think if he had got that, he would have opened up a bit more. And then, I mean, he took it to breakers. He was up 3-0 in the third. He couldn't hold on. And I think what you saw, and you made some good points while we were watching that, was that he just, you know, he was trying to rally a little bit too much with Carreno Busta. Carreno Busta's game is predicated on having so much consistency, not a lot of force. He wasn't missing a ball. And, I mean, that's really what it came down to.
Yeah, that's where you see the experience hurting him. In that he ended up playing the big points in Carreno Busta's style of play, and that's where he needs to establish his game. And if he can't, he needs to figure out a way to do so. And you do that by gaining a lot of experience, understanding what's working under pressure, and picking the right shots, which is basically what Federer has done for his living. Has made him the greatest of all time because he knows exactly what he's going to play in the exact moments he's going to play him. And throughout his career, he's been able to to do that, but it did take him a few years to gain that experience. And I think the same thing is going to happen with Shapovalov here, in that he's now one to be reckoned with, and he's going to be on everyone's radar when he gets drawn. The guys are going to start to learn about him. Then once they learn about him, they're going to attack his weaknesses, and he's going to have to go and work hard on his weaknesses, which I already heard him in his post-match presser saying that I have to get back to work. There's a lot of room for improvement all around my game. So he's very, very well aware and well grounded in that he's not even close to being done yet, which is great to hear, especially given what's going on with the eclectic enigma, Nick Kyrgios, who just consistently disappoints us, and he says so himself. He says, I don't like being a disappointment. This is not a position I want to be in. Yet, can't really control his emotions and lets it go. So look at the tale of two different maturities. Kyrgios a few years older than Shapovalov, but Shapovalov definitely the better professional in terms of a professional athlete in demeanor, but still talent-wise, possibly not off the charts like Kyrgios. But what do you think about Nick?
So, I'll get to Nick in a second. Just in terms of Dennis, I think that, his ceiling is still very high. He's going to be, I think, low 50s after this event. He's going to be 51, 52 in the world, which is tremendous. And, he's only 18 years old. So, not a lot to defend for the rest of this year. And I think that he's going to, continue to just improve. And I think if he can crack the top 40 by the end of the season, you got to think that he's going to slow down a little bit. He's got some DC that he's going to play against India. I believe that's somewhere in Canada in the next couple of weeks. And then from there, depends on what kind of indoor schedule he wants to put together. I'm pretty sure that he's going to qualify for that next gen tournament in Italy. So, yeah, it depends. Can we see him maybe winning a tournament like St. Petersburg, something like that, like as a 250? Maybe. It depends on the draw. And see how he goes getting, but again, really like what I'm seeing from him, and sky's the limit. Getting to Kyrgios, what a disappointment this guy is becoming. It's just in a way I feel bad for him, because I've been supporting him for so many years, and I still think he's such a great talent. Watched him practice, he looked good, he said it himself. And it was funny because I went to his press conference after he lost, and he was basically saying, I worked harder here than I did in Cincinnati. He had a lost first round, and I made the finals there. He said, I was playing basketball 2 hours before every match. I was having ice cream and shakes, and I made the finals. And he's like, I don't deserve Sebastian Grosjean. He deserves a player who's more dedicated than me. And I'm sick of disappointing everybody, as you were saying. Again, I don't know how much of this is true. We really don't know. He could be deflecting it, because I was talking to one of my colleagues, Kamakshi Tandon from ESPN, and I was telling her that I really think he just wants to do it his own way. You know what I'm saying? Like, when he succeeds, he's like, look, I'm doing it my way and I'm succeeding. And when he fails, he kind of just deflects that, because he's still, top 20. So, at the end of the day, it's not like he's 198 in the world. He's made a couple million bucks already this year, just made finals of Cincy, took home $500,000. It's not a joke, man. He's still successful. He's not maximizing.
Yeah, but at the same time, it becomes one of those things where, you're an individual sports guy, and you usually, most players, unless they rise the rankings too quickly, they're looking to be number one in what they're doing. And Kyrgios is a disappointment, or any young guy who isn't searching their soul and dedicating their lives to becoming the best. That's where it becomes a big challenge for me. You still, even from a guy like Donald Young, you still hear him say things like, I still want to fulfill my dream of being number one. He's still going after it. Now, we all know he probably will never get there. It won't happen. But he's going to keep trying, because that's what he's dedicated his life to doing. I used to write down this quote of Agassi. And I use it actually on the court a lot with my students, and it goes something to the effect of, I don't run down balls that are out in the doubles alley because I want to. I do it because I have to, because I've committed that I will run down every ball until somebody tells me to stop running, or until the ball bounces twice. And what that tells me is that, that's somebody who's going to go beyond what is the expectation, beyond what he's gonna take the variability or the emotion of the human being out of the equation, and he's just gonna go after the ball. He's gonna see ball, run ball. And you know, Kyrgios makes it a little bit more, a lot more emotional, a lot more based on his feelings. And hey, personally, I deal with a lot of this, a lot more feelings in these generations, and I'm sure the people listening out there know what I'm talking about. Everyone's got a lot of feelings, and they're not simply putting in the work to get to where they need to be. And so, for anyone to expect us to celebrate Kyrgios being a top 20 guy and sort of trying to make some sort of justification, I think it's just, it's kind of hollow. If that guy's playing to be top 20 in the world, then so be it, but then he doesn't deserve the endorsement contracts and all the extra things that he gets. And I don't know, that's something that'll come back to haunt him if he's thinking that way.
I think, yeah, I mean, look, I'll tell you another story quickly. A couple of things very interesting that are tied to this. So I watched his match yesterday against the Bryan brothers on the grandstand with Matt Reed. He was basically only playing just because Matt Reed's helped him a lot. And he's a good guy. I do believe that he's a good guy, Kyrgios. I think he's a very caring guy, loving guy. But he's not enjoying it, man. Like, he came on the court, you see the Bryan brothers. How old are the Bryan brothers? They're older than us, man. Coming on to putting up the rackets, with just getting any contract they can just to keep going. And they just love playing. Even Matt Reed, like, they're introducing his name and he's putting up his racket. And Nick Kyrgios getting the loudest ovation. And he's just standing there like this, Like, whatever. The crowd, there was a part where they lost the first set 6-1. They got destroyed 6-1, 6-1 after the first set. And, everybody's, chanting his name or laughing. Matt Reed's laughing. And you see Kyrgios with nothing on his face. He just doesn't want to be there. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And he's just, I don't know if he's suffering from depression or he's just a confused generation. Like, he feels like he's entitled, whatever it is. Like, it's that millennial type of mentality. But it's the reality of it is that, I like the guy and I love his game. He's got such a cool game to watch, and he's really good with the crowd and the kids and everything. But he's got a lot of work to do, and you won't see me pick this guy for a long time until he does something, and then I'll say, okay, then maybe we can enter that into the equation. But he's definitely going the Bernard Tomic route, but a more talented version that will still be able to beat Nadal and Federer and Djokovic.
Does Tomic affect him?
I don't think so.
No Tomic, would this be an option for Kyrgios?
I'll give you an example. How come Kokkinakis is not like this? He was just out last night with Kyrgios, right? I don't think
Kokkinakis is not fulfilling any sort of.
No, but he's injured though. But
But why is he injured? You don't know. So it's he's another one, another Australian who's not really who's got all the potential of the world, but just isn't blazing it. Maybe it's a generation of Australians that are coming through right now. Maybe they're all sort of hanging around playing video games and not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Obviously, we're all just speculating here, but we have no clue. But it is sort of eerily similar in that there's three different guys and three guys who seemingly, I don't know, they're definitely not meeting their potential yet, and they have a ton of potential to meet if they decide to go down that route. So I think changes do need to be made in order to get there.
And then lastly, before we go on to the rest of the draw, so the same day, so Kyrgios crashes out, and then Taylor Fritz wins his first ever Grand Slam match. He comes into press, and I asked him straight up, and it's actually the videos on the US Open site for everybody to check out, and I asked him, I said, Kyrgios was just in here before you. He's always described and talked about how he struggles with, motivation and getting himself going. How do you, keep yourself at such a professional level and work hard and really try to improve? And he said, you know what? I'm just lucky that I'm wired that way. Fritz was saying that for me, work is not an issue. And when you look at the talent levels, Kyrgios for me is way more talented. If he had Fritz's mentality, you're talking about right now top five guy in my opinion. And I think the problem is that it's just the way that he is. Like a Rios or, those type of guys who have next level talent.
Well, you have the same thing with Monfils, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
but at least Monfils is not a prick. He's going out there and he's not disrespecting people. Like, look at Fognini, another super talented guy. He just thinks he can say whatever he wants.
A dad, on top of it.
Yeah, and then he's just justifying it by making these really bad comments towards, you know, female officials. I mean, he should be out for a while, in my opinion. I mean, that's unacceptable. But that's a different story for a different day. But I think with Kyrgios, it's going to be, it's sad because he's one of those guys who can really transcend tennis in a different way than Federer can. Federer does it as well, but and Nadal.
And it's the younger generations. You're absolutely right.
But I just don't think he can do it. I don't think he wants to do it. I just think he'll be around for a couple more years, you know, just banging away. He'll have those couple great weeks, and then, you know, he's just going to dance to the beat of his own drum, and, you know, that'll be that for him. So anyways, as we move on to the draw, we have Kevin Anderson, who I did pick to reach the finals. He's still alive and well. He beat Paolo Lorenzi today. I was out there watching that very professional performance, even though he lost the third set. He awaits the winner of tonight's, you know, nightcap between Querrey and Zverev. Zverev just took out Isner in a comprehensive display. Very disappointing for Isner. I think Querrey is going to be a different story because he's a much better version of Isner in terms of maybe doesn't serve as hard or as, you know, with the angles because he's not as tall, but he's serving 135. He's got a much better backhand and he returns better. So I think that's going to be tough for Zverev. He still does have a chance. Irrespective of who wins, I still got to stick with Anderson to get through. And then, I mean, look, he's going to be licking his chops to play either Carreño Busta or Schwartzman in the semifinals. And I think it's going to be Carreño Busta. He looks a little bit fitter. Schwartzman was struggling with a lot of injuries out there today, so we'll see how that goes down. And then tomorrow, we got some good matches. We got Nadal, Dolgopolov. Nadal, again, not playing his best. He's doing what he needs to do. As we said, he's not really penetrating through the court with his forehand. It's kind of sitting up there, and guys are clocking it like Leonardo Meyer and a couple of the other guys did in the earlier rounds. But I still think that Dolgopolov will sabotage himself somehow, and he's going to go down in maximum four sets, if not straights. Goffin, Rublev, very impressed with Rublev. I was out there yesterday watching him play. I think he's one to watch. He's got an amazing forehand. He's playing against Zoomer out there on court five. Very, I had a very good vantage point. I was watching a lot of what was going on. And I think that he gets through Goffin. It's going to be a good match. I think I'm going four sets for the young Russian. We got Federer, Kohlschreiber at night. Going to go with Fed in that one, straights. And then a really good one on the grandstand. I encourage everybody to get just, you know, a grounds pass and get up there and watch that one because it's going to be an amazing atmosphere. Delpo team. Parsa, how do you see that one unfolding? It's tough. I think it could go either way, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think we need to talk a little bit about Federer as well. In his double five-setters in the first two rounds, his back looking achy. And I guess the only thing to really say about it is he looked very good against
Vintage last night.
Just moving and split stepping and feet on fire. And so I wonder what's going to happen with Kohlschreiber, who's a perfect guy at this stage of the tournament, which is a little bit scary, Nima, in that you're going to get a guy who's not going to overpower you and hurt you, and he's going to be able to sort of figure out his rhythm. So if he can be explosive and figure out the rhythm, watch out. In terms of Del Potro and team, I think that Del Po is the quiet one that's walking through the draw here.
Yeah.
Yet he's a former champion. So he's sort of being put on the outer courts and not given the respect. And I think he's going to absolutely take out team. I think it's going to be max four sets. The matchup for me is not a good one for team, although it would be a lot of hard hitting. I think Del Po is the one that's got a little bit more variety in the actual change of pace in this particular matchup will actually help him.
And a little more patience, I think.
And a little more patience, and I think will serve a little bit more consistently. And what I mean by that is I think he can get a set or two at 7-5. I think when push comes to shove, I take Del Po's serve over team's. And I think that's ultimately going to be the difference. I think it's only going to be a couple points. So look at it like a 7-5, 7-6, 4-6, 7-5, something very, very tight. But I like the big points for Delpa.
Okay, Parsa, so we're going to just quickly run down what we had from last week just to own up to our picks. I had Nadal, Kyrgios, Anderson, and Ferreira as my semifinalists. As we know, Nadal and Anderson are still alive and kicking. I had that as the final, so hopefully that happens and makes me look good. Kyrgios and Ferreira both losing in the first round. Then I had Mannarino and Donaldson as my dark horses. They both made the third round, so not too bad. And then we'll get into the women. So what did you have?
Yeah, I had Nadal, Federer, Zverev, and Cilic. And my dark horses is Goffin and Johnson. So not horrible.
You got Goffin still in there too.
Yeah, Goffin's still in there. One of those guys will lose because they're playing next if they both win in Nadal and Goffin. So, you know, I don't know. It's that bottom half of the draw was decimated, and you know, we'll see how all that pans out.
So as of right now, how do you see this tournament unfolding?
You know, I need to see Federer's match tomorrow. It's going to tell me everything. Because I know what Nadal has to offer. And if Federer is a little bit banged up, this is Nadal's tournament to lose. But if Federer's on, there's no chance that Nadal can beat
him. If tomorrow's a five-setter, Federer, Kohlschreiber, Federer's not winning this tournament.
Right.
He's got to roll those Kohlschreiber tomorrow night.
But if it is like a 2-3-3 or 4-3-2 or 4-3-4... Even a 5 in there.
Then I think he's going to take that win, go against the winner of Del Potro and team, and go to the next level.
Right.
He's going to start, you know, you're going to see
he's an expert at this. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. He's going to, then that's when he's going to start to excel, because then he knows that after that, it's likely going to be Rafa. Yeah. And he's going to be at top form for Friday. So, yeah, I mean, with that said, I definitely think that I'm still going with a Nadal Anderson final.
Yeah, I'll take a Federer query. How about that?
You want Federer query final?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. One guy we got to talk about that you mentioned him is Alex Zverev. So comes in with the world on his, you know, in his hand, in his palm, whatever it is, and he crashes out second round. And it's just like, I mean, what's going on there? I mean, this guy's proven that he can play, you know, really master three-set matches, even at the highest 1,000 level. And, you know, beating Federer, beating Djokovic, winning 5-6 titles this year. What do you think? Is this going to be a pattern that he's going to be able to figure out? Or do you think that 5-set matches will continue to be a struggle for him throughout the course of his career?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I think I have a different view than everyone, okay, to be honest with you. And I think I see it very clearly, but that's me being a proud, you know, person in the game, and I can only make predictions and feel from a distance.
Okay.
But I feel like Zverev is right at the stage right now where the other guys aren't necessarily doing well, so he's the guy that picks up all the pieces. And he's right before, and he's garnering the points and getting everything together so that now he can make the schedule so that he starts to peak at the slams versus trying to win anything and everything he can.
Okay.
Does that make sense
to
you? So now he's got the ranking. Now I think this following year, now he starts to train and play in order to peak at Australia, Roland Garros, Wimbledon, US Open, where right now he just tries to play as well as he can every single week.
Like Montreal for him right now is very important.
Very important. But for, you know, for Djokovic, he'll pull out. He doesn't even care.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, doesn't make a difference because everything matters about US Open, you know, at that time. Or at Queens, it's about Wimbledon. Or, you know, at Madrid, it's about Roland Garros. And so that's what I think is the next step. I think he's still... You would like to see, you know, as I mentioned with Shapovalov as well to you off air, is you would like to see one of these young guys break through and break the mold and then sort of fizzle out, get to a semi. Zverev could have got to a semi here and fizzled, and we would have been like, okay, here we go, he's coming. He hasn't had that result yet, so that's where you get the little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a question mark, and you're not sure. But I do think he's right at that in-between stage, and he hasn't really done anything other than continue to climb and improve every single year.
Okay. So I think, I mean, but that's a fantastic point. And I think next year, you have to think that...
It's got to be something.
This guy's going to try to have to win a slam next year.
I don't know about winning, but it's got to be semis or better, you know, two of the four or something like that.
Something like that, for sure. Okay. Let's move now to the women's draw. Just a quick, actually, heads up. Congratulations to Djokovic and his wife for the birth of their daughter, Tara. And then Serena Williams actually gave birth to her daughter a couple days ago as well, too. Name, I believe, unknown still. Was it daughter or son? Daughter, I believe, right?
Daughter.
So congratulations to both of them, and we can't wait to see both of those great champions back on tour. Moving now to the women's draw. So we have actually right now live action with Kvitova, Parsa up 7-6-5-2 on Muguruza.
Ah.
So, you know, Kvitova, you know, showing her overall prowess. It's interesting because... Never really done that well at the US Open. And never, like, and this is a slow hard court. So it's completely not conducive to her game. But, you know, she's just really stepping in and overpowering the hard-hitting Muguruza, which is something she's not really used to. There's maybe a couple players out there, Serena, maybe Madison Keys, Pliskova, you know, and Kvitova that can maybe hit her off the court, and that's exactly what's happening. So we'll see how that one ends in a bit. But with the draw presently, as it sounds, we have Pliskova, the number one seed, taking on Brady. What do you know about her?
Yeah, she's a gritty competitor. You know, she's got good variety, willing to do whatever it takes. Just doesn't have the class of Pliskova. So I think that's going to be a very difficult matchup for Georgina Brady.
But Parsa, I mean, you know, the Americans are coming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's a lot of average players, bro.
You got Sloane Stephens in the quarters, Venus Williams in the quarters. You still got Madison Keys to come tomorrow against Svitolina.
Who's a potential winner here?
Yeah, you got Coco Vandeweghe, and then you got Brady. That's a lot of Americans.
A lot of Americans.
In the Sweet 16 or further on now. So as it stands right now, let's quickly, you know, own up to what we had picked last week. I had Pliskova, Svitolina, Wozniacki, Halep, and my dark horse is Sakkari, who lost to Venus a couple days ago, and then Sharapova, who lost today. She's out as well. So obviously Pliskova, Svitolina are there. I'm going to have, you know, one of my finalists going there. I believe I had Pliskova going through. And then bottom half, I got nothing because Wozniacki lost and Halep lost first round, first, second round. So what did you have?
I had Pliskova, Keys, Muguruza, and Halep. And dark horse-wise, had Stevens and Coco Vandeweghe. So I did okay, although I have Muguruza winning the tournament. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. So it opens up some doors, man. I had Keys and Muguruza in the final. I think this becomes Keys' tournament. But Stevens, Coco, and obviously Pliskova, you know, she's played a little too many three-setters for me. I think that scatter a little bit is actually going to hurt her. And what I mean by scatter is she's playing well, then not playing so well, playing well, then not playing so well. And I think when you run into later stages of the tournament and your talent level or your current level of play is similar to someone else who's playing just a bit cleaner, you lose those matches versus if you're playing someone who's a little bit less talent and, you know, you go through your ebbs and flows. And at the same time, you know, Pliskova hasn't proven to be a big-time match player for me yet. You know, I think she takes advantage of draws and she plays big-time tennis, but not like she hasn't gone out and just lit the world on fire. And I think that's going to come back to haunt her because I do think she's one of the best players in draw, even though I don't think she'll win it. I do think she's one of the better players, and I wouldn't be surprised if she does. But it just, form-wise, doesn't seem to be rounding out that way. What I really like about Keys is that she's really utilizing the American crowd to her advantage, and the crowd is really getting behind her. Even if you look at the schedule tomorrow, they put her again second on, and I think that's like some sort of, you know, she played so well at midnight last night, and I think that they want to see it again, and they want to give her the chance.
They're hoping that Svitolina's sleeping.
Yeah, because Svitolina is she can win it.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I love about this draw, Nima. I mean, Pliskova can win it. I think Brady cannot. Vandeweghe could potentially win it. I don't think Safarova could.
Looking at this right now,
Svitolina.
I'm just looking at these four matches. When I look at Pliskova, Brady, Vandeweghe, Safarova, Svitolina, Keys, Kazakina, and Kanepi, just looking at those eight players, I'm pretty confident that the player that will come out of this section is going to come from the Svitolina Keys match. Whoever wins that is going straight to the semis, probably finals.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I just think that there is the best ball strikers of the bunch here and have the most to offer. You got to say that it's Svitolina. Unless Keys comes out red lines tomorrow night, she's going to come.
And there's that. And then Coco for me is dangerous, Niman. You know, did you watch any of her?
A little bit.
She is eating up the energy. She's an energy player who's at home and gaining a lot of energy.
But what do you think? But Safarova's got that lefty cunning game. You think she's too old now to do it or what?
I think that Coco hits too hard.
She's going to overpower her. Yeah. Safarova hits a big ball too. I think you're going to see a lot of 50-50 matches for me tomorrow, which is great.
Which has been
see.
The trend. There's been a lot of three-setters.
Yeah, which is good to see. But as it stands now, I'm going to have to go with Svitolina and Pliskova making the semifinals. from this top half. What do you have?
Yeah, well, I can't go much different than what I had, and I had Pliskova and Keys, so I just got to stay with it. But, you know, and in the bottom half, I had Muguruza and Halep, which I don't think either is going to go, so I have to go with Sloane Stephens. And, yeah, it could very well easily be a Venus-Williams-Stephens semifinal there.
Yeah, yeah, that's, I mean, Kvitova looks like she's...
Venus looks super dangerous, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, she is just hitting the ball to the open court and just working the points. And I don't know, she looks a bit better. Normally, she has serving problems. Those are not here this tournament yet.
She's an aunt now.
She's an aunt. Yeah. You know, I think that that's a big deal. And
yeah, feeling good, feeling that the good vibes.
She doesn't want to see the baby until like that Tuesday or Wednesday after
the
tournament.
Yeah, bring home a trophy for her, exactly. Right? So that would be pretty cool. So we have, you know, Kvitova a couple points away now. She's serving at 5-3, 35. To take out Muguruza, and then the winner of that will play Venus. You know that's going to be a night match all over it. And I think, but I think when you look at Venus versus Kvitova, I give the slight edge to Venus. But that's a match that Kvitova can also win because I think, even though Venus is the greater champion, to me they're kind of in the same level. You know what I'm saying? They're a little bit, they're veterans. They both won slams. They've been there, done that. They have that comeback story from illness and injury and all of that stuff. And I think that...
Don't you feel like Kvitova has a little bit more mysterious losses, though?
She does. But if she gets to this level of the tournament, if fitness... I mean, and but Venus, with her Sjogren's disease, you know, she could get tired out of nowhere, too. And then Kvitova's hand might be hurting her. You know she's not the fittest of them all at the moment, because she hasn't had time to train. She's just happy to be back, really. So that, to me, is about grit and determination more than anything. And I think they both have it. But based on what we've seen this year, with Venus making the finals of Australia, making the finals of Wimbledon, you got to go with Venus in that one. Then I definitely think that Stephens gets through. She's had a good summer. Venus, Stephens. Huh, I don't know. You got to go with Venus Williams. For me, right now, I'm going Venus Williams and Pliskova in the finals. And unfortunately, I'm going with Venus to suffer her third major loss of the season. She'll take it with grace and a great acceptance speech and with a smile on her face. But Pliskova to be your 2017 U.S. Open champion. What do you have?
Massive for her. I'm going to have Keys going through. I just think she's got the it right now. She's moving much better than she has in the past, and she's hitting the ball as big as she always has. So I'm going to have Keys and it's that Williams and Stephens that I can't really figure out. And, by the way, Keys-Coco, I think, is a dangerous matchup for Keys as well, by the way.
They're really good friends.
They're really good friends, but they also hit the ball similarly, and I think Coco's...
Got a little bit more variety.
Yeah, and if you go toe-to-toe with her, she's going to bring it. She's not going to back down at all. And so if there's a little bit of a friendly, you know, something or other, I think Coco would just run right over. That's just an energy opinion. In terms of Stephens, you know, Stephens has had a great summer, but consistently gets to the semi and finds a way to lose. And I don't think there's going to be much different than that. And so I'm going to have Keys and Williams in the final. And I'm going to have a same thing as you, Madison Keys, upsetting Venus.
Okay. So one last thing before we wrap up for this week. First of all, court conditions definitely slower. I'm not convinced that it's necessarily because of the resurfacing that they did the Thursday before the event started, because there were some bubbles on the court. I think it's just because it's been cold. And when it's cooler conditions like it's been, I mean, this is the coldest US Open I can remember in recent history. I mean, I've been wearing sweaters.
Cold is a little, but yeah, it's beautiful.
Not yesterday, man. Yesterday I was freezing out. Okay. And the day before I was freezing out.
Yeah, but that's because you're in the media, in the shadow, when I was sweating out in the field. So just depends. You know, the sun isn't, if it hits you, you're fine. You know, cold is a little, cold from Mr. Toronto himself. Cold.
Colder.
You can tell us about cold. Yeah. Let us know.
But I definitely think that it's been a colder US Open.
Yeah,
and it affects the conditions. I mean, when they're in the hundreds. Then you're gonna feel the ball
gets heavier and moves throws through the court. But although it looks like we talk about Nadal throughout the week, the ball doesn't go through the court at all. So that's gotta be some grit on the sand on the court as well.
Exactly. I would agree with that. And lastly, before we wrap up, a couple words on Sharapova. Obviously, she got the wild card. USTA milked it big time, putting her center court, night matches, date, whatever, right? Like, highlighting her to the max. A lot of the other players were not happy with that. Wozniacki was very miffed about it. You know, she was like, I'm the number five player in the world. Why am I in a court five at 11 o'clock?
Yeah, she was also number one in the world. I mean, no offense to Wozniacki, but
yeah. Well, Wozniacki was number one in the world, too.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And you know, Sharapova came back with a comment like, you know, put me in the parking lot, I don't care, which is cool to hear. And, you know, I don't know where she is right now, but I'm in the fourth round. And now she lost today, and there was a tweet that, you know, now Sharapova knows where Wozniacki is and all that stuff. So it's good to have a little bit of that out there. I think it's good to have that back in that banter a little bit. Again, for me, very happy to see Maria back. I think she's good for the women's game. She's a legend. And, you know, she's a Hall of Famer, and I just hope she builds on this. I've heard rumors from a lot of top coaches that they don't think she's got that much longer in the game. Just because physically, I don't think, you know, she's going to be able to handle it. We'll see. If anything, she's determined. And I think that you're going to see her at least for 2 more years. That's my prediction. And we'll see how it transpires. I mean, see what she plays for the rest of this year, because there's a couple months to go. And then, you know, starting up in Australia.
And one more thing, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
If you would agree with it, but I think the women's draw is more exciting, more compelling, and has been more dramatic for me than the men's side.
It has been. I think as we tail off, I mean, if Friday brings us a Fedal, first time ever in NYC, at maybe.
But the final will be.
Yeah, final cannot be that good.
Right.
It's really unfortunately impossible.
So it's that one match.
Because you're going to have Karina Busta versus Federer. Or Schwartzman versus Nadal, or Anderson versus Federer. It's not going to happen, unfortunately. It's going to be a straight set affair. And maybe if the other guy plays max 4 sets, just we better hope that Nadal and Federer don't lose, because then the ratings are going to be zero.
Yeah, if it's like a Goffin Anderson final, I mean, we're
nobody's going to be watching that one, unfortunately, with all due respect to those guys. And so we'll see what happens, but. It is what it is. Final slam of the year. Walking wounded. We've had a ton of injuries, but we're getting through it. And I think the next few days are going to bring us some decent tennis. Hopefully, some Americans do some damage. I always like to see the hometown players, you know, bring it. It's great for the crowds, and everybody embraces that. But I mean, if there's nothing else, Parsa, I'd like to say thank you for joining us once again this week.
Thank you.
Been great to do 2 live podcasts with you in NYC. Next week I'll be back in Toronto for the finals, so we'll be doing it over Skype once again. With that said, anybody looking to get down from tomorrow, Labor Day, till the end of the event, make sure to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling needs. And if you want to plan Australia, get on that ASAP, because they already have those packages ready to go. You can follow Parsa at Parsa Sammy, myself at Tennis Connected. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, our website. We're going to have daily previews, reviews, all of that stuff. You know, if you follow us on Instagram, I'm doing a live story throughout the day, and you can see a little, you know, some tidbits behind the scenes action as much as you need. And I also do a daily preview every morning, so make sure to check that out. Once again, thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to download us on iTunes, and we'll chat with you guys next Sunday. Be good and talk. Thank you.